Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How did Nicholas Copernicus change the universe from a remote corner of 16th century Poland? Copernicus had outlined his theory demoting the Earth from the center of the universe to one of many objects orbiting the sun by around 1514, and even shared handwritten copies with a few colleagues. But it wasn't until an extended visit by a young German mathematician named Georg Joachim Rheticus that Copernicus finished his legendary book On the Revolutions of the Heavenly Spheres, which, as legend has it, was placed in his hands as a published work just moments before Copernicus died in 1543. So what might have transpired between this devout Catholic cleric and his young Lutheran champion that helped shift humankind's understanding of the Earth's place in the universe? Author Davis Sobol explains what is known for certain and imagines the rest in a two-act play incorporated into her new book, A More Perfect Heaven, How Copernicus Revolutionized the Cosmos. She's in town to appear tonight at Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art, and we're delighted she could make time for us this afternoon. Deva, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So what got you thinking about Copernicus and about what we do and do not know about his life?
I first learned about this meeting between Copernicus and the young German genius in 1973. That was the 500th anniversary of Copernicus's birth. And it immediately struck me as meat for a play. Mm-hmm. But that was a long time ago, and I had never written a play, and I shied away from it. But I never forgot it. And in recent years, there's been a lot of interesting news about Copernicus's book. Every now and then, one comes up for sale at auction, and they get more and more expensive all the time. It's up to about $2.5 million now.
Wow.
And I just felt it was time to write this play. And it was a tremendous challenge because I'm accustomed to writing, to being a reporter, writing narrative nonfiction, not to making up things. Mm-hmm. And it required many, many rewrites to get bold enough to turn this into a real play. And what helped me was writing the book around the play, mm-hmm. being able to tell the full story, everything that's known for sure, all the documentation, so that the scene is set and there's a clear separation between the play and the narrative sections that precede and follow it. So I don't pretend to know things I don't. But this is a meeting that I was so much wanting to listen in on. And there's no way to do it. There's no record of what they said to each other, how the young man convinced the old one what he'd avoided doing for a lifetime, mm-hmm. how they got around the bishop's law that no Lutherans were allowed in the town. That's fascinating to me.
Let's talk about that, because to remind people, it was 1517 that Martin Luther nailed his 95 Theses to the church door.
I'm not sure he actually nailed them to a door, but he certainly had a lot of complaints and made them public.
So, but this was a time when the church was especially concerned about heresy,
yes.
and about threats. And you have all this going on at the time that Copernicus is really refining his ideas.
That's right. And Copernicus worked for the Catholic Church. He was a cathedral canon, which meant he was an administrator. He had various jobs in the church hierarchy. And he had started out because his uncle was the bishop of the Diocese of Varmia, where he lived most of his life. And by the 1530s, many of the neighboring Catholic dioceses had fallen to the new faith, so that bishops had converted, and Copernicus's bishop became intensely paranoid and passed a law that there were no Lutherans allowed in the town. So what did Copernicus think when this illegal alien showed up at his door, unannounced, uninvited? He just appeared one day.
Although, of course, it's sad that Copernicus lost his parents at a young age, it was fortunate that he went to the care of his uncle because he got really a first-class education.
He certainly did. He went to the Jagiellonian University in Krakow, and then he was sent to graduate school in Italy on two occasions, first to study church law and then to study medicine so he could become the bishop's personal physician, which he did.
You know what I love about this story is the fact that, you know, I guess if you know that Copernicus had this job with the church, you imagine that maybe he was sort of phoning that in so that he could get to his real work. But in fact, he seems to have not taken any of his work for the church for granted. He was very, like, detail-oriented.
He was so engaged. One of the things that surprised me the most was finding out about the 3 years he spent in the southern provinces of the diocese, working with the peasants, recording who owned the rights to which parcel of land for which the peasants had to pay a small rent. And he had to collect the rent. He had to record if a peasant could no longer work and left that parcel of land to a child. And he engaged them and settled their disputes and put them back to work. And if they had had a particularly hard time, if an elderly couple didn't have children, then he would make things easier for them. He would lower the rent or give them a horse or do something to ease their way. So he seemed to have been a wonderfully fair-minded person.
What kinds of technology did he have available to him to observe the cosmos?
He had no instrument anywhere near a telescope. Mm-hmm. He had almost surveyor's tools that helped him gauge the distances between bodies. And that was important because he was looking at the positions of the planets, and the way to do that is to watch them against the background stars or in relation to the sun and moon. So he could make angular distance measurements.
And I guess we don't know of a eureka moment for him where he thought, this is not what we have thought. But he did realize that Ptolemy's math didn't quite work.
That's right. He objected to the prevailing work by Ptolemy, which dated back to the 2nd century. So that had been in place for a long time. Mm-hmm. But he felt that Ptolemy had not respected a basic tenet of mathematics, which held that the motions of the planets should be uniform and in perfect circles. And certain Islamic astronomers had filed the same complaint against Ptolemy in the 13th century. But they did not switch places between the Earth and the Sun. So why Copernicus chose to do that remains a mystery of the universe. He never says. But you can imagine him considering the case of each planet and noticing that somehow the sun's motion around the Earth every year had something to do with the orbit of every planet. That probably gave him the notion that maybe it was the Earth that was moving, because that would settle so many problems at once, would explain why we were seeing that repetition. It would explain why the planets seemed to be going backwards sometimes. If the Earth were moving around the sun, then the planets weren't going backwards. They just appeared to be doing that as the Earth caught up and passed them on an inside track.
And, of course, this is the time before anybody knew anything about something called an atmosphere. And so in many ways, it seemed to people illogical. Like, we would know if we were moving. We would feel, you know, these great winds or something.
Right, right. Well, they certainly knew there was air surrounding the Earth. But the idea that all of that could somehow move along with the Earth seemed crazy. It almost seems crazy now. If you didn't know that all these things were true, it would be very hard to believe them, because your common sense is telling you all the time that the ground beneath your feet is not moving, that you are not rocketing through space at 1,000 miles an hour in our rotation and 70,000 miles in our revolution.
So Copernicus has these ideas, and he begins to write them out, and he shares them selectively.
Yes.
What sort of response did he get?
It's not known what response he got. He seems to have put out his brief sketch of his idea sometime around 1510. And as was common then, if you had a new idea, you wrote it in a letter to people who were interested in the same things you were. And then the recipients of those letters were allowed to make more copies and send them to people they knew. So that created a community discussion. And everyone wrote in Latin, so there was a common language. But in terms of any real correspondence about it, there doesn't seem to be any record of that.
My guest is author Davis Sobel. Her new book, which includes a two-act play, is called A More Perfect Heaven, How Copernicus Revolutionized the Cosmos. She's in town for an appearance tonight at Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art. You can find information about that appearance at dallasmuseumofart.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, we have lines open now at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Hey, Rollins Gilliland here. I'm really excited right now because you know what? This is a time of day that I bet you're like me, that you absolutely make appointment radio. KERA Chris, and I'm with right now one of the powers behind that show, the senior executive producer, Jeff Whittington.
Hey, Rollins. Thanks for being here today.
Well, I'm really excited about it. I'll tell you, first of all, it's a great show as always. I was laughing on the way over here because I was thinking about, you know, last week when you had a show about boredom, and I thought, well, this guy that's the guest has certainly not been listening to Chris every day because there's no such thing as a boring day on Chris's show. I mean, I've laughed, I've cried, I could go on and on. But anyway, you're the senior producer, and I really wanted to spend some time with you and with the people out here that are really listening in and trying to support us so we can bring... Folks out there, you know that. We got to have the money. We need the money. The breaks are going to be, you know, all about supporting the station. But I also want us to have some fun. And I'm telling you, I am a huge fan of this man, Jeff Whittington. He wears many hats. And Jeff, would you just, I mean, when we get back, I want you to tell me a little bit more about how you actually, as the senior producer, how you sort of vet this and set it up. Because
sure.
Because you make it look easy. I've been a guest on the show, so. But it isn't easy, I know that. So can you call right now? Everybody out there, let's do the thing right now. Let's call 888-694-6931. Show our support for Chris Boyd, because you know right now, Chris Boyd is by far one of the most valuable assets that this station has and one of the great reasons to live in North Texas.
Yeah, the number to call, 888-694-6931. It's toll-free. It just takes a couple of minutes. Just dial 1-888-694-6931. Support the Think program, the show that we bring you every single day with interesting guests that you get to talk to as well. You can click and join online as well, safely, securely, and easily at kera.org.
Absolutely. You know, I have a song. KERA's Chris, North Texas's bliss, the audience responding, the pledge drive absconding. What's that number again?
888-694-6931.
Or you can go online to kera.org. Show some support. Let's just cut the you-know-what. Let's call that number. Let's get online. Let's bring this drive to a close. But you know what? Today, let's also do it as a real show of support and love and appreciation for someone who really makes this, the whole North Texas area, a better place to live. Chris Boyd and Think.
The number to call, 888-694-6931. Glad you're with us today, Rollins.
Oh, I'm proud to be here.
Support the show. Support the station. Do it online right now very safely, securely, and conveniently. Go to kera.org, and thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's certificate program in financial planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Dava Sobel. Her new book is called A More Perfect Heaven, How Copernicus Revolutionized the Cosmos. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. So I guess it's one thing to put these papers out and send letters to people. It's another to publish a book. Did the church sort of tolerate the idea that people would throw around ideas without anything being really official?
Yes. In his opening description, Copernicus said that he was at work on a big book, and the book would explain the theory in full and provide all the mathematical background. And then he went to work on that, doing the math, doing more observations. But he worried about a biblical backlash because of sections in the Bible that refer to a motionless earth. Psalm 104, the earth was laid on its foundations, not to be removed forever. And, of course, the book of Joshua. Mm-hmm. If the sun is at the center and not moving, then why would Joshua have to tell it to stand still? So all of those things probably kept him from publishing the book. Decades went by, and there was no book. But because that early correspondence had taken place, people who knew about these subjects knew that there was this Polish canon up in the north who had this unusual idea.
So what do we know about why Rheticus took it on himself to head to Poland and contact this guy? Not even, it wasn't like he'd written ahead and didn't have an invitation. I mean, he showed up literally out of nowhere.
Right. As far as anyone knows, mm-hmm. he just appeared out of nowhere. He was on a self-improvement journey, visiting astronomers and trying to learn more. He was an avid astrologer. It's always been thought that Copernicus was not an astrologer, that he did not believe in any kind of astrological prediction.
Which was something somewhat uncommon.
Which would
have
made him even more modern, mm-hmm. more unusual. And it's just not known. He just never says anything about it one way or the other. But Rheticus said plenty of things about astrology and had a sense that Copernicus's cosmology would aid an improvement of astrology. And he really wanted to do that. So he decided to visit him and learn all about the theory.
And here's where you sort of depart into the realm of fictionalized history with the play. Talk a little bit about the first scene, by the way, is Rheticus is not present. We see the bishop and,
right.
and Copernicus.
Right. Copernicus has been called to the bishop's side. The bishop is sick. He's obviously eaten something bad, but he thinks he's been poisoned by a Lutheran spy. And so that sets up what Copernicus has to deal with and why he might not welcome a visitor from Luther's own university in Germany. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry. What did you want me to?
Well, just as we get into the fictionalized story, and then in the next scene we have Rheticus lying at the doorstep of Copernicus.
Right. So he's come all this way, and he's, poor thing, he's exhausted, so he's collapsed in front of Copernicus's house, and Copernicus finds him there, thinks he's perhaps ill, and tries to help him, and that Rheticus jumps up thinking he's being robbed, something that might well have happened to him on the road. Mm-hmm. And then to his horror realizes he's just injured this person he's traveled so far to see. But they get through it. And Copernicus, as soon as he learns that Rheticus is Lutheran, tries to make him go away, tries to explain that his hands are tied. It's just an impossible time. But daylight has come, so the sun makes a cameo appearance, and Copernicus doesn't want to send this young man out into the village in the daylight. Questions will be asked. He might be arrested. So he decides to hide him for the day and hides him in his tower. And while they're up there, they talk about the theory. And it turns out Rheticus has not understood at all that Copernicus really means to turn the earth.
Hmm.
It's not a hypothetical exercise. It's how the universe works. And so he feels that he's come all this way only to find a lunatic.
Huh. And we should say that the Lutheran Church was no more receptive to the idea of, shifting to a heliocentric view than the Catholic Church.
Lutheran called Copernicus a fool, thought it was just a grab for novelty.
Hmm.
Yes. And Luther had no sympathy for astrology. He rejected what he called the star peepers, that they just foresee nothing good out of the planets.
So you also have in this play some complicated personal lives for these two men, some of which I guess is based on things that you were able to factually confirm.
Yes, everything in the play is based on something factual. Mm-hmm. For example, Copernicus had a female housekeeper. And part of the reason there's so little known about Copernicus is that only 17 of his letters survive, which is a tiny number. There are 1,000 from Galileo.
Hmm.
So you're trying to draw some personality conclusions. However, among the 17 letters, 3 of them concern this woman, this female housekeeper, who has so enraged the bishop that he is leaning on Copernicus to make her go away, which, of course, Copernicus has to do. So my first few attempts at the play, I wasn't sure how I wanted to handle this. I mean, were they really lovers, or was Copernicus just the victim of idle gossip? There's no way to know. Hmm. There's just no way to know. But I decided it made much more dramatic sense for them to be in love and for this to be a hardship, their parting. And how unfair that she, who hasn't really done anything wrong, has to be sent away while this real heretic is sheltered in the house for 2 years. Of course, in the play, I compress the time.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, Reticus stayed for 2 years. And there are very few clues as to how this illegal alien managed to stay in Varmia under the bishop's nose. Eventually, the bishop must have known about him, but must have seen that this book, despite all its crazy ideas, was a big, important book because he offered to write poetic verses to go with the opening of it. So he obviously took it very seriously and must have agreed.
Is it possible that the bishop didn't fully understand the book for which he offered to write an introduction?
Oh, it's likely that he didn't understand it. He was a very intelligent man, but he was not a mathematician, and he had not studied the planets in any way. Copernicus had another friend, the bishop of the neighboring diocese, who was his very dear friend and who shared his interest in astronomy.
Would it have been so unusual for a church employee in the time of Copernicus to have a lover? He was not a priest, right?
He was not a priest. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there were 2 other canons in his cathedral who also had concubines, and one of them had children with his concubine. So they were clearly living like man and wife.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was not uncommon. There were popes who had illegitimate children. It was a different time.
Now, let's get back to Reticus. What sort of permission would he have had to get to be away from his university for 2 years?
He seems to have gotten into some kind of fracas with the local poets. One of his friends wrote some very offensive, vulgar verses about Luther, and a few people decided to take a little vacation. And Reticus was such a genius that the most important person at the university really looked out for him. So he was on a leave of absence. So he had a couple of years to travel around and improve his understanding of astronomy.
Talk about how you structured the personal relationship that springs up between Reticus and Copernicus.
I love thinking of these two people having so many obvious differences, the old man and the young man, the Catholic and the Lutheran, the cautious astronomer and the astrologer who is ready to predict the fall of Islam and the second coming of Christ through astrology. They were really different people. But they came together over this idea, and they worked together. And I think that happens often in science, that the most unlikely people can be united by a concept. And that really excites me. So I envisioned that even though Rheticus would be horrified at first, he would see a way that this would make astrology better, mm-hmm. and he would come round and really help. He also had a different sexual orientation by all accounts, mm-hmm. because years later, when he was teaching in Leipzig, the father of one of his students filed formal charges against him for having gotten this young man drunk and performed shameful sexual acts upon him. And that was a crime, a capital crime, mm-hmm. in that time, and he would have been burned if he'd been convicted. So he ran away, which is often an admission of guilt. He's also affiliated with a crowd of people who were known to be experimenting sexually. So it seemed a safe guess that he might well develop an attachment for the young boy who was the bishop's servant.
Which is another element that you have fictionalized.
Exactly.
My guest is author Davis Sobel. Her new book is called A More Perfect Heaven, How Copernicus Revolutionized the Cosmos. She is in town for an appearance tonight at Arts and Letters Live that takes place at the Dallas Museum of Art. You can find information about the appearance at dallasmuseumofart.org. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Rollins back here on the marathon with Chris Boyd's Think, and the senior producer here as my guest right now is, of course, the wonderful and amazing, also the host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know, our Jeff Whittington. Jeff.
Hey, Rollins.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here. Well, you know, we've heard from many of you during this drive. We're still waiting to hear from you. The number to call, 888-694-6931. You can join online as well at kera.org. You might want to pick up a copy of our guest's book. It's available. We've got copies of the book available at the $120 membership level. You can check it out online. That's just $10 a month if you decide to become a sustaining member of the station. And you'll know that your membership is always current. It's always up to date. It makes a huge difference. Call right now.
I spend that much on doggy treats every month, you know. Those dogs can just get you. Listen, I asked you earlier, or at least I referenced about you as the senior producer mm-hmm. for the show, about how you vet the guests. And I think people out there, you know, I know when I'm listening in, and God, I love this show, you know, so much, and I appreciate it. But I know you make it look easy. I've been a guest on Think, I'm proud to say, and I felt like you just made it look so easy. So could you just tell us out here a little bit about how you vet the guests and how you set it up? And
sure. Well, you know, we have a great audience, as you know.
I'll drink to that.
You talk to many people in the audience, Rollins, and we hear from you out there in the audience about the shows that really have an impact with you, the guests, the topics. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a topic-driven show, so, you know, we just kind of, Chris and I put our heads together. We keep track of what's going on in the world, who's making the news out there, and you know, things that are happening, trends, pop culture, history. I mean, you name it.
My God, I feel overwhelmed hearing that list.
Across the board. I mean, you know, the show kind of covers the waterfront.
It does cover the waterfront,
and it's great because people participate. It's great because people call in, they write in, they participate in the show every single day. It's a call-in show. It's your forum. And you know what? You participate when you support the station.
Well, and that's why I was just going to say right now is a perfect time to mention just for you that we are trying to raise the money so that we can put this particular fall drive to bed and support Chris and support Think and show our respect here for the guest, you know, our wonderful Jeff Whittington. So call 888-694-6931. That's 888-694-6931 or go online to KRA.org.
And don't forget, you can get a copy of our guest book today.
Absolutely. For what, $120?
The $120 membership level.
Well, that's easy. Let's just do that. I mean, what is that, $10 a month?
It's $10 a month.
I don't know. I'm just fascinated by what you do because, again, I mean, how many books – I'm fascinated by what she does. You know, I've always felt like we really in North Texas need to put Chris Boyd on a flatbed and roll her through the streets where everybody can throw rose petals at her because I can't imagine –
She'd like that. I think
yeah.
She'd like that.
Well,
she
has to wear a lot of sunblock because, believe me.
For sure.
You know, but, I mean, how many books does she read? I mean, and how do you
All
decide
of them. She reads
which
every book.
One? People pitch you with the ideas of the book?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we need guests on the show, and there are a lot of really smart folks out there in the world who are, you know, not just writing books, not just producing incredible documentaries or not non-documentary films, not just teaching really interesting courses at major universities all over the world. I mean, there are a lot of folks
They're
in the world, Roland, and our audience is so diverse and so smart here in North Texas. That's really who we're serving. Every decision we make about what's going to be on the show is really starts with the question, is our audience going to get something out of this? Is the Think and the KERA and the North Texas Public Radio audience going to get something that's stimulating out of us having this guest on the show?
I just listen. All right, that number, 888-694-6931 or online to KERA.org. I'm just fascinated, though, with the way I've watched her grow. I mean, you know, she was always an amazing talent anyway, but I've watched her grow as any professional that gets better and better and better. And it's so seamless, again, watching the way the flow of the conversation with her. I just don't know how she does it. Honestly, can tell you. There's two things I could not do, and that's wash windows on a 70-story building or do what you or Chris do. So that's why I'm asking everybody to call
888-694-6931 or contribute at KERA.org. Rollins, I'm really glad you're here today. This is a lot of fun, and we're hoping that you will support the station, and you can get a copy of the guest book when you join at the $120 membership
Absolutely.
Level.
Absolutely. And slay this fall pledge drive dragon early by calling 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's certificate program in financial planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Dava Sobel. Her new book is called A More Perfect Heaven, How Copernicus Revolutionized the Cosmos. If you want to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So I have to tell you, Dava, the story of Copernicus being on his deathbed and having Rheticus come in at the last moment with a copy of this published book, that sounds like the stuff of fiction, but in fact, that is apparently true.
Well, it wasn't Rheticus who came in with the book, but when Rheticus took a copy of the manuscript to Nuremberg, he was sending back finished sections little by little. And about 5 months into that process, Copernicus suffered a stroke, and then his condition deteriorated, and he was paralyzed and couldn't speak. But he held on, and he had a caretaker in the cathedral. One of the other canons was watching out for him, and that person brought him the final signature, the final batch of pages, put them in his hands, and he died. So that was reported to Rheticus by the bishop of the neighboring diocese, who was Copernicus's closest friend. So it's more than a legend. It's a firsthand account. And it's so melodramatic that I thought, I can't possibly use that in my life. It will just be laughably overdone. But But I really did have to include his death.
How many copies of the first edition of this thing still remain?
There are about 600 copies of the first and second editions. Mm-hmm. So both of those date from the 16th century. The first, I think, is 200 plus. There are more second than first. But it shows that the book was really treasured. It was a big, important book. People bought books just as unbound pages, and then they would choose a binding according to what they could afford and what they felt appropriate. So it's about 400 pages. And copies survive that were owned by everyone you've ever heard of in the history of astronomy.
Including Kepler.
Yes, including Kepler. His is one of the most interesting copies of all. And it's possible to go to a library that owns one of these books and ask permission to see it and actually be in the presence of this iconic work. It's very thrilling to look at it, even if you don't understand what it says.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones now to Kent in Arlington. Hello, Kent.
Hello. Yes, it was a bizarre coincidence. I was just reading about your book in the back of the Science News. There's a little thing about current books, and I just finished reading that, got in my car, turned on the radio.
Oh, and I haven't seen my Science News because I'm away from home.
Yeah, well, it's in there.
Okay.
latest edition. Coincidentally, also, my daughter's name is Deva.
Oh, my.
It's written in the stars that you have to buy this book.
Absolutely, absolutely. We named her that because of there was a full moon the day she was born, and it was at that point when the moon was closest to the Earth, and it's an astronomical thing. So my question: I never knew Copernicus was Polish.
Uh-huh.
That came as a shock.
What did you think he was?
I just assumed he was Italian.
Huh.
He was, that was where everything was happening, and the Pope, and all that. I had this mental picture in my mind that he was just had always been there. It never occurred to me to wonder that he might have come from somewhere else. But my question was it just pure chance? I mean, why I'm going to mispronounce it, Hereticus, show up at Copernicus's door at that particular time and then convince him to publish the book? I mean, it changed the course of history and all, but was there a reason that he was drawn there? And that's my question, and I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thanks for your call.
Okay, great, yes. Well, Hereticus was much younger, and so he had shown this tremendous ability in mathematics and been encouraged. He started his university studies with the idea of becoming a physician like his own father. But he was guided into mathematics because he had this natural talent. And then the university appreciated his talent so much that when he completed his Master of Arts degree, they created a professorship for him so he could continue in mathematics. And then he had this friendship with the poet who wrote the verses about Luther and decided to go and take leave. And it was while he was traveling, visiting astronomers to learn more about the subject, he entered the city of Nuremberg, and he met a very well-known astronomer, astrologer, cartographer, globe maker who lived in Nuremberg, who told him about Copernicus. And that meeting is what inspired Hereticus to go and find Copernicus and learn about his theory directly from him to become his disciple. He was Copernicus's only disciple.
What was his life like after Copernicus died and the manuscript was published?
He was teaching in Leipzig, and things were going really well for him until the student's father accused him of sodomy, and then he ran away. He also suffered a spiritual crisis. He was not himself, had an emotional collapse, and a friend in another city took care of him, nursed him back to health. He went back to school, studied a new career. What he had intended as his first career was to study medicine for a while. But then he wrote books about mathematics, and he concentrated on areas of mathematics that would augment Copernicus's work, and referred to him a couple of times, and referred to that time of his life as having been a wonderful period, and remembering how kind Copernicus had been to him. And then toward the end of his life, a history repeated itself, and a young man who had heard about Redicus's work came to him by surprise and helped him complete a project that he was probably not going to see through because of his impending death.
So the book was released in 1543. The church didn't get around to banning it officially until 1616.
That's right.
What happened there?
Copernicus wrote the book in Latin, and it's densely mathematical. So it was clearly intended for a scholarly audience. It was dedicated to the Pope. Hmm. The Pope probably never read it, but one of his advisors did and really didn't like it. And something negative was written about it in a book by a theologian, but it did not attract a lot of attention. It was only when Galileo, who had read Copernicus's book, thought that he was right, but didn't say anything until he perfected the telescope and began making observations that seemed to provide evidence of what Copernicus was saying. For example, if there are four moons going around Jupiter, then obviously the Earth is not the only center of revolution in the cosmos. So Galileo, being the flamboyant, outspoken character he was, began lecturing about these things in Italian to an audience of people who could not afford a university education. Mm-hmm. And he wrote in Italian. And this is what drew the fire of the church.
It's in the lingua franca, and people can understand.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so what was he doing, talking about those things, rabble-rousing? And he had to be silenced. And in the process, of course, Copernicus's book had to be suspended. Galileo had argued, begged the church not to condemn Copernicus's book, that now that evidence for his ideas was being found, it would be foolish to ban the book. And if Catholics were prohibited from reading it, then the Protestants would figure out the universe and the church would be embarrassed.
Yeah.
But they didn't listen to him. Mm-hmm. So in 1616, his book was put on the Index of Prohibited Books, not really banned, because it had been too useful in changing the calendar.
Yeah, about that, because the dates for things like Easter have to do with the lunar calendar.
The lunar calendar, the solar calendar. And in Copernicus's time, it was hard to determine the exact length of the year. And he had worked on that. Mm-hmm. So rather than ban his book outright, they suspended it until corrected. And 4 years later, corrections were published. So if you owned the book, you were expected to make these corrections in your copy. And it turned out that outside of Italy, hardly anybody did that. Galileo made the necessary corrections in his copy.
Didn't really help him, though.
No.
Davis Sobel's new book is called A More Perfect Heaven, How Copernicus Revolutionized the Cosmos. She'll appear at Arts and Letters Live tonight at the Dallas Museum of Art. Davis, thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure.
Thanks to you for listening. My name is Chris Boyd. Have a great day.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.
Rollins Gilliland back here with my guest. Unlikely to say that. I mean, I feel like Charlie Rose being here at this desk. The Jeff Whittington, your host on Fridays of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know and the senior producer for The Think Show. You know, I'd love to say the power behind the throne with Chris Boyd, but you know what? I think she's the czarina of North Texas.
Well, you know, Rollins, I mean, Chris does a great job. The show is always really interesting, and Chris is on every single hour.
Every day.
She's on. She is. She's great. It's a real pleasure and a real luxury to work with Chris because, you know, we always know we're going to get something great
when I decided to do this, and you know, the Rollins Marathons. I mean, I thought one of the great thrills is that I really get to honestly say what I think. And so many of you who are listening in right now, you know that I'm exactly one of you. I'm only really internal here at the station when I'm actually here recording a commentary or doing something like this. But in other words, I'm out there at my desk listening to Chris every day or Anything You Ever Wanted to Know, And she, like most people who are really remarkable and lovely and giving and talented pros, she's very humble. So, I mean, I knew that if she was my guest and I was saying, you know, she can't say I'm so wonderful, but I can and you can and we all can. So that's why I'm asking you to call 1-888-694-6931 and say to the person on the phone, first of all, say I want to give a lot of money. When you call 888-694-6931, but also say, you know, I'm doing this because I really appreciate Chris Boyd and Think.
It is the Think Show. You hear it every single Monday through Thursday from noon to 2 here on the station. Also from 9 to 11 in the evening. You know, heard from a lot of you that you're enjoying the evening broadcast of the show. Well, decide what it's worth to you. Decide, you know, think about how much you listen to KERA. How often do you tune in to Think? And put a value on that.
Call, just put your money where her mouth is. I'm telling you.
Call
888-694-6931
or do it. Click and join online at KERA.org. And don't forget, Rollins, folks can pick up a copy of our guest book this hour at the $120 membership level.
$10 a month.
It's $10 a month if you become a sustaining member. Maybe you can do $20 a month and you can get two copies of the book and send one to a friend. We know you enjoy the topics and the guests we have here on the show because we hear from you single day. I'm the one that answers your emails when you write in, and I know that you appreciate
And you're the one that lines up the guests, I swear. I mean, y'all are such a team, honestly. Again, 1-888-694-6931. You know, I'm talking to you out there. You're in your car. One of the things I learned when I first started doing any kind of radio is that everybody's doing something else when they're listening to us. You know, they're washing a dish or they're at their desk or they're driving a car or they're changing a diaper or they're doing something. And you know, now with the new app capability, I mean, they could be, you know, committing any number of different things at the same time that they're listening. But one of the things that I have to confess to you out there is I sometimes listen to Think twice a day. I mean, I did last night. I listened to that show again, and I thought, well, why when I'm cleaning the kitchen am I listening to this again? And I'd heard it before.
And it's not just because your radio's broken and stuck on 90.1.
Well, it kind of is, actually. You know, I don't know what the deal is. I mean, I feel like it's like Night of the Living Dead. The first thing I do every morning is I flip on that radio, and then it just stays on all day. And that's why I call 888-694-6931 or go online to KERA.org.
Yeah, if you're listening online right now, it's really easy. You're already there. Just click over to the support page, you know, fill out the membership form, become the next new or renewing member of the station. If you're listening to the podcast, maybe you time delay, maybe your life doesn't allow you to listen to the show live, either online or on the air. Well, if you listen to the podcast, you know what? You can still make a contribution and help offset the cost that KERA incurs providing
that
podcast.
Right, because that's not free, but it's free to our listeners.
It all seems, you know what, Rollins, it all seems free because you can turn on the radio and you can listen. But you know what? It's not free. Everything that KERA does for you has a cost.
Well, that's what you said on your show last Friday. I mean, you know, I just thought you said, you know, that everything looks like it's free and it's not.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. It's the way you make it look easy as a senior producer about the way you line people up and the way she makes it look easy when she's interviewing a guest. Listen, I'm talking to you out there because I'm one of you. I don't mean to be corny about it, but I am. I'm a listener to the station. I do not work for KERA. I work with KERA from time to time. And I'm asking you to please call 1-888-694-6931 and support this show. I know you love a lot of shows, but Chris Boyd's in a class by herself, and this show is truly what sets us apart from a lot of the other NPR markets, major around this country.
Well, Rollins is a really dedicated listener and participant because you're doing this all day long today, and we really appreciate the investment you're making of your time today here at the station, Rollins. And
I'm thrilled.
You know, and I know people love to hear you on the air. I worry
only
that
if they're drunk.
Waiting. I just worry that they're waiting to make that contribution to later in the day. They should do it right now.
Well, they should do it right now. I mean, the way I look at it, if you're dating and you don't give somebody the ring, they could end up with your roommate. You know, I mean, so why not call 1-888-694-6931 now instead of waiting?
Do it online as well. Click and join at KERA.org. And thank you so much. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so
for your support.
Much.